discovering stories of courage, determination, and hope. Welcome to Faith Radio's On the Road. Now, here's Ryan Thomas.
Life is short, I want to live it well. One life, one story to tell. Life is short, I want to live it well. And you're the one I'm living for.
Esther Emery says her life was in pieces when she decided to go offline. Her marriage was holding on by a thread after her husband betrayed her with her best friend. And she was reeling after walking away from a demanding career as a playwright and theater director in Southern California. After a cross-country move with her husband and two small children, she found herself in a new city without a job and not knowing who she truly was. Her year without the internet began on a whim. In a matter of minutes, the idea was fully born. She was tired of the frenzied pace her life had taken, and she partially blamed her screens. First, Esther didn't want a cell phone. Then she canceled the internet altogether. Her book, What Falls from the Sky, chronicles Esther's year of being disconnected, how what began as an exercise in discipline slowly brought stillness and rest. As she found space under the brilliant sky God created, she began to rebuild her marriage and reconnect with a God she had shoved away. The fascinating story we will share together today on the road. Welcome to the show, Esther. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me today.
Well, it's an absolute delight to talk to you, and we should probably begin with the fact, and we'll explain more about why you're there in a moment, but you are legitimately joining us today from what you term a yurt, correct?
That's right. It's a cross between a tent and a house. I like to say that if a tent and a house got together and had a baby, they would have a yurt. So it's an off-grid existence. I live in the woods of Idaho near wilderness, and I live this lifestyle with my husband and three children. It's a simple life. It's a courageous life. It's kind of an adventurous life, and I find a lot of peace and joy in it.
Oh, that's fantastic. And I should mention, too, it is not nearly the same as a yurt, but I do come from a town that was population of 7 people in Montana. So there is a certain kinship that I do feel with you, Esther.
There is. My mother's from Montana, and Idaho is just right next door.
Boom.
So there's a lot of kinship there.
I think this is going to be really fun. And we'll talk more about the yurt and the mountains later in the interview. But first, you know, there aren't too many author biographies, Esther, that make you audibly say, wait, what? but here's what your publisher Zondervan says about you, Esther. Quote, Esther Emery used to direct stage plays in Southern California, but that was a long time ago. Now she lives with her husband and three children off the grid in a yurt, tending to 3 acres in the foothills of Idaho's Rocky Mountains. I mean, I legitimately could not resist your story after that. That's pretty epic.
Well, it is. It's also very ordinary. I think some of the things that seem extraordinary in our day and age, if we've just been a little further back in human history, we find very, very ordinary and very human. The ability to be out in the woods and to do for yourself are very human characteristics and really really provide a great life for our family.
As we begin, can you give us a quick sketch of what life was like for you when the book opens in California, Southern California, as a theater director and a playwright?
Oh, it couldn't be more different from where I am right now. I was moving at kind of a fever pace, and I had been for so long I couldn't even notice it anymore. Theater directing is a very competitive career, a very demanding career. It's just expectation that you would work until 1 o'clock, sometimes 2 o'clock in the morning at night, every night, and you struggle for jobs. It's all freelance, so you kind of elbow each other out of the way trying to get work, and you never know where your next job is going to be. So it's a very frantic, very ego-driven lifestyle, and I've been living that way and succeeding at it. But I had my first child, and I think for many people, parenthood just transforms the landscape. And I sometimes say I was trying to juggle 3 things: my marriage, my career, and my child, and then a second child. And I just dropped all 3, spectacularly dropped everything. I went into a point of real crisis where I wasn't sure why I had been working so hard. I wasn't sure what I was working for. And yet at the same time, I felt like if I lost it, that was a tremendous crisis because I wouldn't even know who I was. If I no longer had this career that I had fought so hard for, I would no longer have an identity.
Well, you hint at it right there. And I think the expectation listening to you describe your life would be that it would take something pretty momentous to change the course of your life and set you on a different path. And sure enough, you had just a heartbreaking season of life that sets the scene for this book. Would you share however much you'd like to about what you went through at that point?
Sure. And I think it's a great gift in my life that I experienced success at a fairly young age, especially success in kind of contemporary terms. It's even more of a great gift in my life that I experienced failure. I really did hit a kind of personal rock bottom. There was infidelity in my marriage, which was heartbreaking. My husband and I did make the decision, and this is really where our story starts. We made the decision to stay together and do whatever we needed to do to rebuild. And we found that in order to do that, we had to retrace our steps a little bit and almost start over. So we, at that point, had two children, two very small children close together, and we packed up and moved to the opposite corner of the country. He took a job working actually with Harvard University, also in the theater, and I became a stay-at-home mom to my two tiny children in a new city, in a new place, really carrying this sense of loss and failure and loss of identity, having walked away from my career, walked away from my friends, knowing that keeping my marriage together was worth it, but also feeling like I had given up so much, I didn't know who I was anymore. And that's when I got this kind of crazy idea, I sometimes say it was my good angel and my bad angel, to drop off the internet for an entire year.
You really described this well in the book, but obviously your circumstances had changed, your surroundings had changed. But the profound thing that you describe is you really had lost your sense of just exactly who you were, right?
Mm-hmm. I had an identity that was based on accomplishment. And so I was on a kind of a hamster wheel where every single review in the art section of the newspaper told me who I was that day. But then if I didn't have another review or I didn't have another success or I didn't have another validation, then I felt this emptiness that I needed to fill again. So I was really on this hamster wheel of needing to be told over and over again that I was doing good work. And all of that just dropped away. I was no longer producing content for an audience. And so I no longer had a sense that I was doing anything, that I had even really any value or anything to offer the world. It was terrifying.
Oh, that's profound, and yet I think many of us can relate to a sense of that in our lives as well. We're talking with Esther Emery. She's the author of What Falls from the Sky, detailing her year of being disconnected from our all-encompassing world of cell phones and the internet. And you brought us to this moment of decision. You describe it as being somewhat whimsical. You decide to disconnect from your phone and from the internet. Where did this come from?
But out of nowhere, obviously, which means out of everywhere. I mean, I think that the exact moment I was giving up my cell phone, because my cell phone when I had a career was this kind of touchstone. There was constant communication, buzzes and whistles all the time. And I found it very terribly silent. I kept kind of looking at my phone like, isn't anybody going to call me? Doesn't someone care? And so I thought, well, I'm not going to pay for something that just makes me feel bad about myself. So I called up and said I'd like to cancel my cell phone entirely. And they said, oh, well, if this is something that you can't afford, we can get you an easier plan. You know, they're giving their sales pitch. And just as a whim, kind of my husband was in the room and I kind of wanted to make him laugh. I said, oh, you know, I have to go completely off of the cell phone. I'm going to go for a year without a cell phone, and I'm going to write a book about it. It was the kind of sardonic thing that comes out of pain, you know, those jokes that you tell when you're grumpy. And the person on the other end of the line completely bought it. She dropped her sales script, and she said, oh, I would read that book. And I thought, oh, I think my next year of my life just got written for me. That was the moment.
So that's amazing. So it really was just something that escaped from your lips and then you basically spoke it into existence.
That's exactly right. And I was captivated by the idea of doing something that would then be another form of accomplishment that could be validated by the world. And this is the part of my experiment that was not really my good angel. It was me actually trying to find another way to do what I had always done, which was produce content for an audience, do something interesting that other people could then respond to. I'm a child of the millennial generation. It seems to me like going off the internet really is like going to another country. I would be able to have this adventure and relate to people what it's like to use paper maps and paper phone books and tell the story in an engaging way. I had no idea as all of this was evolving, but there also was a glimmer of genius to it. There also was this good angel that was urging me into something that would ultimately lead to positive transformation for myself and for my family.
Well, so you had this sense of purpose about what you were going to do, and you even had the book in mind, as you said, from the very beginning. But were there fears as well? I mean, did you fear a sense of isolation over the course of a year?
Well, my family certainly did. I had my brother and my sister-in-law, a couple of people said to me, you know, you're in a new place, you have small children, these are already risks for isolation. Your friends just aren't going to pick up the phone and call you. If you don't even have text messaging, you're just not going to have access to human contact the way that you did before. And I just waved them off. You know, I said, I know I'm doing the right thing and I can survive anything for a year and it'll be an adventure. And that's kind of the point. But of course, I also knew deep in my heart that they my friends and family certainly had a point.
Now, as you begin this year, so kind of lay the ground rules out for us. What were your rules? You did have access to a landline phone, is that correct?
Yes, I had access to a landline phone. I felt it was important that I had access to emergency services. I have children, of course. And actually, during the first year, I realized that the best rule was no electronic communication. And so actually, this is an odd one for some to understand, but it came to make sense to me. I also didn't use my credit cards or debit cards, because that moment of transferring information across the electronic wires, you know, that was the habit that I was trying to break. Mm. And so I didn't have the cell phone. I didn't have any email. I couldn't use Google. I didn't have Google Maps. Anything that was communicating across those kind of instantaneous digital communication was off limits.
Okay, fascinating. Esther Emery is with us. She's the author of What Falls from the Sky, detailing her year of being disconnected from our all-encompassing world of cell phones and the internet. So as you begin this process of disconnection, how does it begin? How did it go as you entered into it? And was it anything like you expected it to be?
Well, I was immediately brought up short. I mean, the first thing I got was a big slap to my ego. The very first day, Ryan, I failed. I went back on the internet within hours of the moment that I had said that I was going to go off for an entire year. And I tell you, I couldn't, it was like reality had shifted on me. I had no idea how addicted I was. I had no idea to what extent the addiction was physical, was out of my control. I just passed a computer and my fingers just kind of did it without my permission. I just was online. And in that moment, I realized I have undertaken something much, much greater than I imagined. I'm in much deeper than I realized, and my kind of bravo and confidence has really gotten me in deep now. The whole first week, first month, really, I experienced what you might call classic symptoms of addiction or as withdrawal. I had irritability. I gained weight because I was eating so many donuts with that kind of like, what do I do with my fingers energy? All the cinnamon rolls that I went through because I couldn't check my email. There was classic indications of dependency. And it was incredibly eye-opening to me because I've had the internet my entire life and never realized that it was so integrated to such an extent that I couldn't actually control my use of it. Very eye-opening.
Wow. That is fascinating. Well, you really describe this as a spiritual journey and not just a communicative journey, right? But how did God begin to meet you during this year?
But this is my favorite story to tell because it was completely not my intention and completely unexpected. I had one person say about my book that the word healing that I use so often towards the end of the book would be too exultant if I had known it was coming. But I really was actually completely surprised. I came into this kind of cynical, kind of not expecting anything but my own kind of continuation of my old habits. And I discovered in this silence such a tremendous longing for spiritual experience. And this rediscovery of my childhood understanding of Jesus and this kind of push, this will to be a person of faith that had not been on the surface for years and years and years. And it really was an unexpected and tremendous transformation for me.
Wow.
To discover that.
Well, you know, you hear so much discussion about we are more interconnected than we've ever been before. You know, we have each other at just our fingertips, literally through Facebook and Twitter and of course, our cell phones and the internet. But one of the most interesting questions, I suppose, would have to be, you set it up, you know, exactly what a fragile place your marriage was at the beginning of this experience. But how was that relationship impacted by this year away from cell phones and away from the internet?
Well, it was my first win. You know, when I first told my husband that I was going for a year without the internet, he has a somewhat cynical sense of humor, just like mine. And he said, okay, so you're trying to go back to 1980 for some reason. And that's all he said to me. And 2 months later, he and I were sitting together on the couch every single night, no screens, and having quality time together. And honestly, I think that it was those moments of silence, those very ordinary moments of silence as a couple, making dinner together, washing up together, not being distracted by tremendous amounts of entertainment or also the distractions of the traumas of the world, that allowed us to rebuild in a way that even conversation and discussion couldn't. Sometimes when we would get into conversations about what had happened to us and how to fix it, it would be hard to avoid traps of laying blame or guilt or accusations, and we'd end up causing more pain. But the ability to be silent and present together, the confidence that the other person was listening, was paying attention, was not distracted, allowed us to develop this regained trust in one another. And he found that within a couple of months, he was reminding me to be sure and not get on the internet because he felt that it had helped us so much my crazy experiment really had helped us in a way that he could experience.
That's so cool. Esther Emery is with us, the author of What Falls from the Sky, detailing her year of being disconnected from our all-encompassing world of cell phones and the internet here on the road. Ryan Thomas is my name. What do you remember then about reaching the big goal? 1 year without the cell phone, 1 year without the internet. What was that day like, and did you celebrate in any epic ways?
Well, within a month of the end, I came to dread it. By October of my year, I started in December, so October was nearly the last month, I had come to a point where I was so grateful for the silence and the rest and the calm that had come into my life that I didn't want it to end. And I also had come to a kind of maturity where I came to understand that this can't be your whole life. Your whole life can't be running away from the real world and what the world really is right now, which, as you say, is a world of cell phones. And it may be kind of crazy, but it's where we live. I knew I had to come back into the time and place that I actually live in. But I was enjoying that last month so much that I was treasuring those last few days and feeling like it was building up a kind of security of a spiritual experience and safety and calm that was going to have to carry me through the next few years of my life. When I did jump back on the internet, though, and this is a testament to the power of how addictive screens are, all that maturity just kind of wiped away for a minute. You know, 6 screens open at once, and I'm pushing away my children, and I'm trying to, you know, answer all the messages all at once, and get away, and it was late for lunch, and all those things that we are in this time and place. It really was proof, again, in this kind of bookend way, that the internet is a powerful tool, but but also something that we should be careful with, because it does have certain powers to control our behavior, or at least because it gives us things that we want that can control our behavior in ways that we're not always aware of.
Is that really the central message that you would sort of pass along and seek to share after what you've experienced? It's not that, because I didn't get the sense in reading it that you were saying, and you've said it in the interview as well, that you were saying that, you know, there's some inherent evil to these communication tools. It's not that at all, but how do you share sort of that lesson that you've learned and that you really want to pass along?
Well, I'd say the central message of my story is don't give up on the possibility of healing. I'd almost call it a kind of grown-up magic. Don't give up on the possibility that you don't have to be cynical. You don't have to protect yourself and shield yourself from what you really want, especially in terms of spiritual experience and especially in terms of a life of faith. You don't have to hide yourself away from your desire for wholeness. Because, you know, it just might be out there, and it might be out there because of some crazy joke or because of a failure or because of something that went wrong. But if it could happen to me, it literally can happen to anybody. But I do also want to answer your question about the internet. I don't know that my position on the internet really turns into the central message of the book, but I do have a position about the internet, and that is that I just encourage anyone who's listening to find your own ability to experience silence. Get away from electronics and screens for a minute and make sure you still know who you are. You may be satisfied, you may be delighted to discover that you are still a person, even when you're not producing content or consuming content for this kind of constant entertainment world that you are. And I recommend that you try that out for a few minutes at a time. Remember who you are. It's a beautiful thing. It can help you through hard times and also just give you joy in the good times as well.
That is so well said. Now, we began the interview by describing the location where you were conducting the interview over the phone here today. You are, as you said, in the mountains of Idaho in a yurt. And this book really does have it all, because at the end, it describes the process of you and your family picking up and moving to that mountainside. What is that all about, the modern homesteading movement? What is it that you do, and why did you want to do it?
Well, now we have to give some credit to my husband, whose name is Nick. He was my first convert to the Year Without Internet, as I described earlier. And our homesteading life is in some ways his expression of the same values that I found by going for a year without the internet. It took me as surprise when he announced what he wanted to do. He said he wanted to move to the woods and build a house out of trees. And you can imagine that I had my moment with that, just as he did with my year without the internet. But we both have always been interested in living a do-it-yourself life, because there's so much, certainly joy, but also a power to be found in doing for yourself. And that's something that's actually a little bit hard to come by in our modern day. The ability to say, you know, there's no such thing as hard times for us, because we can make do for ourselves. We can grow our own food. We can store it. We can cut firewood in order to heat our home. And so my husband and I, with our three children, now live not connected to the power grid, and as much as possible doing for ourselves and living a self-reliant lifestyle, which is, as you referenced, the modern homesteading movement.
Oh, it's so fascinating. The entire story really is the story detailed in What Falls from the Sky from Esther Emery. She details her year of being disconnected from our all-encompassing world of cell phones and the internet. And if someone is listening and they're just thinking, boy, I really need to get this book, there is so much in there, where can they go to learn more about you and to purchase the book as well, Esther?
Well, I have a website at estheremery.com. I have to confess, though, that being an off-grid author, I don't participate in social media quite as much as some of my peers do. So if you want to hear from me, get on my newsletter, which is at estheremery.com. Or you can also find my family on YouTube. We have an off-grid channel where we describe our off-grid homesteading life, and It's called Stouch Family Off Grid. And then I also have my own YouTube channel at Esther Emery. And you can find the book, What Falls from the Sky, anywhere that books are sold. So I hope that many people will get something out of it. It's a great gift in my life, and I hope it will be in yours too.
Well, it really has been a gift to get to know you a little bit today, Esther, and to hear this story. It was a pleasure meeting you, and thank you for taking the time to undertake this amazing experiment and to share what you've learned with us.
Well, thanks so much for having me on. It's been a pleasure chatting with you.
Thanks for sharing in the story of this latest episode of Faith Radio's On the Road. For more on today's conversation and the full podcast archive of all our episodes, look for On the Road when you visit myfaithradio.com.